another episode of the Heart Grapevine Radio.
Love Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network.
In the future, none of you are heroes.
You're legends.
Get driven. Stay driven.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Heart Grapevine Radio. I am your co-host, Matt Jocelyn, along with our special host, Smith Hart, the first son of the legendary Smith Hart. Here today.
Yes, beneath that semi-rugged metal beat, I'm here.
How are you today?
I'm very good. I'm very well, actually. It's been a beautiful sunny spring day. It was like 30 above today in Cowtown.
Yeah, I know you had a good time there. You were at Ranchman's last night, is that correct? Tell me about your experience at Ranchman's.
Well, you know, we kind of made lemonade, very succulent lemon cordial out of a kind of a sour lemon, but, you know, it was surprisingly, I got great raves for a card that was a little short, you know, like, you know, some guys were injured and stuff. One guy broke his wrist, another guy, I don't know, broke his ankle or something, couldn't make the shots, but anyway, it was what we had. It was a great great reaction. I couldn't ask for more.
You got a great reaction. I understand you had Rick Titan on the show. Is that correct?
Rick Titan, yes. Rick Titan was there. Great. He's our MC, and I was surprised. Well, like as he was, he introduced Kenny Johnson, who had attended the matches, and I thought Kenny was saying something nice about the Hart family, and you know, all of a sudden, I don't know what he, but he started saying that. My dad never gave him a chance, and none of the Harts ever gave him a break and all that. And he's really sour that he could take on anybody. And then Titan said, that include me. And he said, no, not the commentator, just out of the audience or the Hart family. But anyway, I'm surprised. I was a big fan. I am a big fan of Kenny's. I didn't know he was that bitter and sour. But, you know, hopefully he'll mellow out this summer and, you know, maybe we'll throw him some more comp tickets and, you know, maybe he'll mellow out a little bit. But
well,
anyway,
speaking of Rick Titan and speaking of the legacies of the Calgary and Stampede Wrestling, we should go ahead and go and bring our guest on right now. And our guest is a second generation, if you will, Stampede wrestler trained under Rick Titan directly. If we could bring in Jinder Mahal, the nephew of the great Gama Singh. Jinder, how are you?
I'm doing good, guys. How are you?
Good. I'm applauding you, Jinder. You're one of my favorite prodigies.
Thank you. Yeah, everything's good. Just enjoying the day. I'm out here in Tampa, Florida. Beautiful day, just like Calgary. And, yeah, excited to do the podcast with you guys.
That's very nice. How are your uncle and father doing?
Everybody's good. I actually just seen Gamma last month. I did a show in Edmonton for PWA. They had their 15th anniversary show, and Gamma was there, and Jerry Morrow was there, and it was good. Everybody's doing good.
Yeah, some of my big guys, Jerry Morrow and Eddie Morrow. Both those guys are good guys, and Gamma, of course. And how's your cousin doing?
Cousin's doing good. He's just working on the indie scene there locally in Calgary, Edmonton area, and he's actually has a good job. He works at the WestJet office.
Oh, yeah.
So he's doing pretty well. Yeah, he's doing good for himself.
Yeah.
For our fans that might not know, you were a tag team originally when you first broke into the business with your cousin. Is that not right?
Yeah, that's Gamma's son, Gamma Singh Jr. Yeah, we were tag teaming for quite some time, actually. Maybe from about 2004 to, I guess, when I got signed in 2010. So about over 6 years.
Do you keep in touch with Big Kelly? Giant Kelly?
Yeah, Kelly's doing good. Yeah, I actually spoke to him yesterday. We just did those shows in India about a month or two ago.
That's what I heard. He's doing big things down there himself.
Yeah. He just launched the promotion, and we're actually working on getting some more shows. That's what I was talking to him yesterday about, maybe booking some of the guys. Because I deal with getting the guys, getting a hold of all the guys and all that, because Kelly didn't have the best communication skills. So we're going to get some shows going here soon again.
Well, that's good. Maybe we can exchange boys and stuff. But how's old Tiger Jeet Singh? I don't know if he's related, but he's kind of a countryman.
I haven't actually seen Jeet in a couple of years now or heard from him. But from what I hear, he's doing good, right? He's a good, good businessman.
He's back to Donald Trump, I think.
Yeah. No, I haven't seen him or spoke to him in a couple. I've only actually met Jeet only one time. This is your I've only met him only one time.
Well, I actually had the I've come out and done a few of the Tiger Fests that they do here in Toronto, and Tiger Ali and Tiger Jeet both said to me that they would love to have you. I don't know if you heard of their Tiger Fest events that they do here in Toronto?
Yeah, of course. It was just this summer they didn't run it, right? This past summer they didn't do it. And then I think the summer before that was just the summer that I got released. So I think I just missed that one. And I got released right before the last one that they had, and I think it was already booked or something. And then this last summer didn't happen. Yeah, I would love to come down. Yeah, that'd be awesome. I know
they're used to drawing about 10,000 to 15,000, local Indian population there that come out, and they just absolutely love the product. It's beyond anything that you would see on any other wrestling show anywhere in North America that I've seen, at least.
Yeah, I watched the clips on YouTube. I've seen the clips on YouTube, and the Bollywood boys actually are my good friends of mine, and I know they go, and Sanjay Dutt goes. So, and I know quite a bit of Indian wrestlers that wrestle on the independents. They go on and perform on that show.
In the 80s, we brought in your great-great-grandfather, Dara Singh, and his brother, and a whole entourage of Hindu wrestlers, and the fans went nuts. I mean, the Hindu fans all came out, in strong numbers. They were there, and win, lose, or draw, they lost about half of the matches with our guys as a combination. But they cheered wildly for their guys no matter what, And since they won, then they just would blow the roof off.
And then there's a good question for you, Jinder. Do you think that companies like WWE, TNA, and major North American companies are missing the boat greatly on Indian talent?
Oh, yeah, big time. Actually, one of the shows that we did in India had, I would say, about 60,000 people. It was a big outdoor cricket stadium. And, it's the biggest market I know in the world, but I don't think WWE – I think they realize it, but maybe they just aren't in touch with it or don't know how to tap into it correctly. But they are thinking about big time.
Well, between India and China, there's half the population of the world right there alone, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
I really thought that the far be it for me to say anything, but I honestly thought WWE dropped the ball huge with you when it came to the fact that they had this super attraction in the great Khali, who is limited in various ways. And then they have you that was just a great technical wrestler and somebody that actually understood the fundamentals. Go out there and work. The combination of you two and the demographics of the Indian population, it should have been a slam dunk that you could have been one of the biggest stars of this generation. But what do you think happened there?
I agree with you, but WWE is too focused about what happens here in the USA.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because they only hear the live reactions, the crowd reactions from the shows that are here in the USA at the television tapings or the house shows here. A lot of guys they don't realize that, you know, there's twice as many, three times as many people watching in different countries. You know, like if, like in my opinion, sometimes they focus on just such small, like they focus on like cities in the USA, like they'll focus on like Long Island or, you know, like whereas, you know, like they focus on like cities or like little regions in the USA when the world is, you know, the world is bigger than just what happens in here in the USA. But,
yeah,
I've seen it myself when I went to India, like it, I mean, next to Khali, I was getting, you know, the most reaction. And, you know, like, I walk into the ring, like, I could barely even walk to make it to the ring. The people were pulling me. Like, it was madness. It was crazy. And the Indian
was
just so passionate because there's no real Indian athletes that have made it outside of India. So there's only a very few. And then the ones that they are, you know, they obviously support.
Right.
And, you know, and that's, you know, it's a great point. And I do think, like, in, you know, certain markets, like Toronto, for example, and I think that Calgary and Vancouver specifically as well, they have huge Indian demographics as well that I'm sure that you're very over in as well. Kind of reminds me of Bruno Sammartino appealing to the Italian population in his generation.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, definitely. Actually, yeah, every time I wrestled in Vancouver, great. Like, I was a heel, but it would, you know, I would get a babyface reaction. Vancouver, Toronto, Calgary, Edmonton, and even parts in California, there's a lot of Indians in the Bay Area, Sacramento area, Bakersfield,
yeah.
Stockton, areas like this. Even in, actually in New York, there's lots of Indian people down there, too. But, yeah, I did. I've been. I definitely, you know, heard the crowd reaction, but it wasn't my, you know, it wasn't in my hands where the direction of my character went.
Absolutely.
No.
Well, I think we did jump ahead a little bit here. We should maybe actually go back because you were born and raised in Calgary. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah, Calgary.
And so what are your first memories of wrestling when you were younger?
I'm actually not that old. I'm born in 1986. So my earliest memories of wrestling are, I don't remember anything from Stampede Wrestling during the 80s. I was too young or not born. So his early 90s, mainly WWF.
Yeah, we weren't,
you know,
doing much by then.
Yeah, by the early 90s, it wasn't on local TV anymore. So it was just, you know, WWF.
Yeah.
Was your uncle still wrestling at that point?
Yeah, he was, but he would go on, like, international tours. He would go to, like, South Africa or there still was wrestling in Calgary. I think maybe Smith knows at the Frank and Sissons Casino. You know, there was a couple.
Yeah,
of,
there was, some of my brothers were promoting, and they used Gammon, they used you and your cousin, and they had another guy that died. They brought him in, Tiger Khan or something. Poor bastard died. But
Tiger Khan, yeah.
Yeah, and Gamma went to Puerto Rico, I recall. I was even with him a few times, so.
Yeah, he would wrestle in Puerto Rico a lot, yeah.
Yeah.
And how did you go about breaking into the business? How old were you, and what was the process for trying to get into the business at that point? Because the Hearts weren't really training at that stage, were they?
Yeah, I actually started training and, you know, just setting up rings and wrestling once in a while when I was still in high school, about grade 11. When I was 15, 16, 17 during that time, I would train with Rick Titan, Jerry Morrow, Bad News Allen. Mainly Bad News was my main teacher for a couple of years. Gamma would come, Johnny Smith would come by, Phil LaFon.
Yeah.
The good thing with being in Calgary, there's so many great wrestlers there, and you know, they're all at your. They would all come by and different trainers.
You run
teach
into
different
Ron
things.
Ritchie. Did Ron Ritchie
Ron Ritchie.
Yeah, that's all your dad's alumni. Even Bill Cody, he may have not trained, but he was. He, you know, Bob Pringle and Dan Crawford and Butch Moffitt when he comes around. Kent Johnson,
yeah.
Of course, and even. Those guys that are in Saskatchewan, Weevil Starr and Kerwin Bostock and Crazy Eddie Mustang and lots of other ones, even that Principal Pound. A lot of not bad talent, but pretty good skills, actually, that You know, I just never really had a huge independent entity to go to. It was all kind of diluted, you know, backyard kind of stuff. Even, you know, even what we did was
really And at that time, there was no, I mean, internet, there was no YouTube or social media, so only people that knew about these people were just people in Calgary, and, you know, it was
hard.
That's
right.
If you're in Canada, you're kind of landlocked, you know, it's hard to break into the States or to get noticed.
Yeah, we had limited TV, you know, we were trying to do two shows out of each taping and, out of each event, and didn't have any other real big towns. Once in a while they'd hit Edmonton or some other town, but it really wasn't a systematic thing with the real loop territory and all that. It was just, you know, when you fly too many guys in, you're just working for the airlines. Independent, you know. So, anyway, it's all,
Well, going early into your career, you were actually working for Smith Brothers, Bruce and Ross, with the revised Stampede Wrestling. And I got to say about that roster, you know, I look at who you had there. You had T.J. Wilson, who became Tyson Kidd, Natalya, Harry Smith. You also had guys like Johnny Devine. You had Victor, he was Apocalypse then, but now he's Victor in the Ascension. It was a pretty star-studded roster for a bunch of local independent talent getting brought up.
Another big boy.
Devin Nicholson. And, you know, do you think that, you know, if a promotion like that was to be around in today's market, that they'd be thriving in the modern independent markets?
Yeah, I definitely think so. Like, all those names that you just listed, like, there's Duke Durango, there was Randy Myers is good. There was a whole bunch of talent at that time. But the thing was, there was no such thing as social media and all that. But right now, I think if it was that Stampede Wrestling with that roster, it would obviously be a lot bigger. There's a lot of more eyes would get on the product just via YouTube or Twitter and all this social media. You know, this is just this has just changed the game in the last couple of years.
Yeah, the rents and stuff on some buildings have gone goofy. You know, like the old pavilion, the Edmonton one is demolished, and so is the corral equivalent to the old gardens. They're long gone in Edmonton too. So there's two good-sized perfect wrestling buildings that are no longer in existence. The Calgary Stampede Pavilion is limited in seating. They're taking about 1,000 seats out of it. Now they want like $10 a seat to rent the old thing, you know, and it's pending demolition anyway. It's like, you know, if you can't get a break in there, you know, it's just good location and it's familiar, but really outside of that, I don't know what's so good about it, but, you know, it's just not affordable, and you know, I find not running enough towns. Well, it's just really a difficult thing because there's always someone in before you, maybe that's you know, taking the available money out, or even stunk the town out with a horrible performance and shoddy everything, and you know, maybe a phony charity to boot. So you come in with something half legitimate and good, and you clean it up for the next guy that comes in and runs a shit show. But anyway, it's all you know, out of these, you know, good or bad, big or small, successful or whatever, backyard plots and whatnot, come some pretty good stars that, you know, like that Kevin Owens and yourself and TJ and Harry and Ted, my nephew Teddy. They're all great talent that emerged from this, and they can still keep coming up. You know, I'm sure there's more in the future. And somebody you train, you know.
I see that. Still a lot of people are coming out of Calgary with the Lance Storm camp, like Tyler Breeze and Emma.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's one or two more people at the performance center that have trained with Lance that are, you know, so it's Calgary's still, I believe, a hotbed for wrestling. It's still producing a lot of talent.
Yeah, I find some of the better talent I see down east are guys that I trained years ago at the Hart Brothers School in Cambridge. And the guys that are, you know, they're training guys that are training guys kind of thing. You know, it's all kind of trickled down to about, you know, not exactly generations, but, you know, different people that have met each other and trained and learned, and then they taught somebody else, and some of them are fairly solid little workers, big workers too.
So in 2010, Ginger, you say you got signed to WWE. You went to FCW right away, right?
Yeah, that's correct. I was in FCW in Tampa when I was here in Tampa at the time.
Yeah, and so how did you get signed to FCW, and like who was training there at that time? Like, who was the who were some of the people you were working with, both talent and trainers?
So the trainers were Dr. Tom was the head trainer, Steve Kern, Norman Smiley, Dusty Rhodes, Ricky Steamboat was there. Joey Mercury came right at the tail end as I was leaving. Not leaving, but done with developmental. We would get a lot of guest trainers too, like Animal and even Abdullah the Butcher came by.
Those are all some pretty top names. Top quality guys.
Yeah.
Where is that?
It was awesome. I learned so much at FCW.
Yeah. There was somebody in there apparently, though, that they said was really stiff on the boys and kind of had a kind of a gay penchant or something, gay tendencies. I can't remember his name offhand. I know a friend of mine, D4, said he was very...
Bill DeMott.
He wasn't around, Dave, was he, when you were there?
I was already done from developmental when Bill DeMott was there.
You never saw any of the shenanigans that were reported later on?
No, actually, when I got done with developmental, I moved out to Houston. So I was in Houston for a couple of years, and I would just go to TVs or at the early stages of NXT, like when they did the NXT tournament title, title tournament, I would just fly in from Houston just for the shows only. So I've never even been to the Performance Center even one time, actually, and after I was done with developmental, I didn't really go to FCW again either.
Huh. And so you have never been to the Performance Center, but you referenced NXT there for a moment. And I'm just curious, like, the developmental system seems to have taken a very drastic change in the last year or two. And by all intents and purposes, it's really become a super indie for, you know, all the hardcore wrestling fans around the world. It was not quite like that. It was still pretty much a WWE system of what you would think the WWE cookie cutter factory was when you were there. How do you think your career might have been different if you actually had gone through the current NXT system?
Yeah, you're right. There's a huge difference. I mean, I wouldn't even classify the NXT right now as a developmental system. It's its own thing. But now it's a lot different. I mean, it would obviously be a lot better now because before you even get to the main roster, you're already on NXT, and a lot of people watch NXT, so you're already an established star for the most part. By the time you get to television, like Big Cass and Enzo Amore just debuted, the Vaudevillains just debuted, and, you know, the crowd already knows who they are. You know, they're getting better reactions. Some of the guys on the main roster are, you know, that they're facing. So, it would be a lot different coming up now. And, you know, just the style is a lot different, too. At that time, when I was in FCW, we would train like that, like, as you said, WWE cookie-cutter style. You know, we would have the matches. We wouldn't really step out of the box too much. You know, we didn't want to step on too many toes. But now it seems like the guys have more freedom. You know, they can go out and wrestle like that, that indie-style match with, you know, high spots, false finishes, and everything. But at that time, it was a lot different. The talent that was coming in too, they weren't, like the indie guys per se.
They seem to have an attitude that change is good, you know, and I think they changed a lot of things without really, you know, knowing how it's going to go, and it doesn't go the way it should. It's not like better for the business, and they sometimes will turn another way and another way and another way, and soon they're far from the sort of beaten path that worked for, you know, you might say centuries, and then sometimes never get back to it, you know, in fact the whole business sport itself really has gone a certain way, and it may never go back to where it, you know, with the internet and stuff, there's no secrets in the world nowadays, and but there's different things can happen. You know, wrestling can possibly legitimize itself or It can be promotional wars, but that's the shoot, not the matches in itself. They're sort of part of it, but they're like warriors, and the promoters are like presidents and generals and dictators, and besides being pimps and whatnot, what they already are. But I was wondering if you'd ever had any offers or would, you know, how you would fit in. I guess, yeah, as far as I'm concerned, you'd fit in anywhere, but like, if you ever entertained any deals with TNA?
Yeah, not really. I mean, even TNA, working for TNA, all the TNA guys still work the indies anyway, you know. It's, yeah. I
guess they do, yeah.
I'm just happy,
yeah, they have the opportunity to anyway, if they need to. They've got lots of time.
Yeah, yeah.
I know Billy Corgan is writing for them, and I spoke to Billy Corgan a few days ago in Toronto, and, you know, I don't think a lot of things. I think it's very hard to get through to Dixie Carter. You know, there's a certain mentality there that they want to do it their way, and doesn't matter what else is on the table. They want to kind of they put their brand on it, and if it doesn't work, you know, they'll brand it another way, but they're not going to do it, you know, a conventional way or your way, or, you know, so I think, anyway.
Yeah, and TNA has the Mahabali Shera, so I think they're trying to tap into the Indian market, too. They were supposed to do some live shows, but they got canceled. I don't know what the reason was, but
last time I watched it, they were talking about that.
Yeah, I would do TNA just because it would, you know, make me relevant again. After WWE, like, I was doing good with, obviously, right after WWE, you know, you get a lot of indie bookings and all that. But, you know, now just to kind of refresh myself, now would be a good time.
Maybe,
yeah,
you could re-spark a feud there in TNA with your former tag team partner, Drew McIntyre, who's the champion there.
Sure. Yeah, Drew's doing good for himself, yeah.
And, to go to 3MB, you know, that's kind of a unique partnership. It never seemed to quite gel with the audience, at least from my perspective watching through the TV. But what was your experience running with the 3MB with Heath Slater and Drew McIntyre? What was your feeling of that?
At first, to tell you the truth, I wasn't too, you know, happy about the direction. But then I realized, you know what, it was actually Vince's creation. So I thought maybe, hey, if the man has, you know, wrote it himself, maybe he might care about it. But after a couple of weeks, it was pretty obvious that he had lost all interest. But it was okay. You know, in WWE, you're just given an opportunity, right? It's up to you to make the best of it. And I think, you know, we did make the best of it. Like, we would go into some places and, you know, we would get louder reactions than, you know, we'd get, like, one of the loudest reactions of the night, like, in New York, like, in the Northeast, Philly, New York, or even a lot of times in overseas, like, in England. You know, we were, like, top baby faces there. We would get unreal reaction. But I think, like, near the end of it, it was just gotten too stale. Either they needed to turn us baby face or just, you know, end it. But it was okay. It was something different. You know, I got to, you know, it was challenging to challenge myself because it was something that I wasn't used to doing or thought that I would be doing. But that's pro wrestling, right? You don't always get what you think you're going to get.
I remember
he is like a big dripping tanker that a super tanker takes so long to kind of slow it down or stop it or to make a sharp turn left or right or whatever. Yeah, let alone a reversal, but, you know, a smaller entity could kind of switch around and reconsider things, but they got, once it's in motion, a lot of things are too small to bother with, and they lose a lot of the crumbs along the way, don't you think, Ginger?
Yeah, you're right.
But, now, I remember the last time I actually saw the 3MB wrestle was in Toronto. Last time I saw them live, at least. And the three of you actually came to the ring dressed as RCMP officers. It kind of reminds me of the way that the new day today thinks outside of the box. And I don't know if you remember dressing up as the Mounties in Toronto. Do you remember whose idea that was, perhaps?
Yeah, I remember the Mounties. It was actually me, Drew, and Ricardo. And I don't know, for some reason around that Christmas, at that time we were dressing up as different things. Like, well, we did the thing with that country band, and we were the Rhinestone Cowboys, and we were the Union Jacks in England. So we would kind of change outfits or change gimmicks every once in a while. But yeah, for the house shows, for the new first we were like reindeer for the Christmas ones, like in Madison Square Garden. Then we switched to New Year's babies. Like we just used bed sheets and wrapped us up in diapers. And when Toronto came, we were the Mounties. But at that time, to tell you the truth, I didn't even care. Like, they told me, hey, you guys are dressing up. I was like, all right, whatever. You know, there's no point in arguing and saying.
Sounds like the Hollywood twinks were, going out of their minds at the time with all that stuff.
yeah. But it wasn't our idea. It wasn't our idea. The writers. Well, they say Vince said do it. So I don't know.
That's what I mean. The twinks.
To go with the creative again, another angle that came up around that time that certainly got a lot of YouTube plays, and I don't know if you remember much about it, was an angle you did with Santino Marella and the great Khali on SmackDown, where you basically had a flute and were trying to charm Santino's snake. Do you remember whose idea this was and what all came about from this?
So in the day, it was Mike Rotundo was the agent, and he told us, hey, Vince wants something to do with flutes. You to play the flute and Santino's cobra to get charmed. But that's all they said. And then we just, between all of us, me, Santino, and the rest of 3MB, we just kind of came up with the idea, hey, how about Khali have one too, and then we'll do it.
When you were playing with your flute, didn't Santino's snake kind of rise up and hiss or something?
Yeah.
It spit venom.
Yeah.
You a big load of venom.
So that was a Vince idea, but it was up to us how we wanted to do it.
Yeah, good idea, the snake biting people, like similar to Mr. Sacco. Yeah, Mick Foley's Sacco. I thought Santino was a great talent, and it's too bad he hurt his neck like TJ, where he's kind of out of the active business now. But I thought Santino pulled off all those stunts, and some of them were, stupid as hell, and other ones were actually not bad. But whatever, it didn't matter to him how goofy the Hollywood writers were. He pulled it all off with great success, I thought.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. He's a great wrestler, and he always makes the best of what opportunities give it to him. You know, no matter what crap they give the writers, giving me.
You turn a slight into an opportunity or something that's kind of a swerve. You know, you make the most of it and get back on track. And he's one of the best ones at doing that.
Do you keep in regular contact with Santino right now? Have you actually been following what he's been doing with the Battle Arts promotion up here in Toronto?
I actually do. I've seen him at WrestleMania week. I shoot not that often, but, every couple of months, maybe we might exchange text messages, but he's a good friend of mine. Yeah, I actually do follow the Battle Arts, and, he's doing quite well. He has the school there, too, and actually his one of the guys from his school, Hornet, he's from that Toronto area.
Yeah. Teaching in India.
He's in India right now for 6 months as the Khali's trainer at Khali's school.
Have you actually had a chance to see Hornet work yet?
Yeah, I have. I've known about Hornet for years, even before I was in WWE.
Oh, yeah? And did you ever get a chance to wrestle against him on the indies, or?
No, I never got a chance to work him.
My son, Michael, had nice matches with Hornet in the Toronto area.
Yeah.
Actually, some much better matches. That's good. I like Khali as well, and Hornet both.
Yeah.
Well, Jinder, we've taken up quite a bit of your time here today. We don't want to take up too much more, but I want to ask you, what do you got going on right now? Do we see, like, you're only 30 years or not even 30 years of age yet, and do we see maybe a potential return to WWE, or what do you have on the go right now?
Actually, right now on the go, I've got into real estate and to rehabbing homes. So at the moment, I have two homes here in Tampa that I've having here at the moment, so that kind of keeps up me tied up during the week. But I wrestle on the indies quite often. I got some tours coming up. I'm going to go to South Africa in the summer, return back to India. Actually, I'm going to go to China too. And there's a place called Macau in China. It's like apparently like a Las Vegas of China.
Yeah,
going to go there. And other than that, just keep it busy with the real estate and international tours. I got bookings here across USA too, like you were mentioning. I'm going to be in your neck of the woods for Warriors of Wrestling in here in a couple of weeks.
Oh, yeah. Is that in Calgary?
No, in New York there, in Long Island.
Oh, okay.
It's my birthday.
The Warriors of Wrestling, right? WOW.
Yeah,
I don't know them, but that's Smith's hometown.
Oh, no, I thought it's yours, Mike. Aren't you from New York?
Yeah, I was born in Long
Beach.
No,
I'm in Toronto. I'm up here near
San Francisco. Sorry. Oh, actually, I think I was talking to the producer earlier. Never mind, sorry, wrong guy.
Yeah, he's from Long Beach.
The one other guy.
Yeah, I was born there. I also like fixing up old houses too, Jinder. I did a lot of that in my day. I used to actually have a realtor's license in Calgary, and I did fix up a few old houses. But sometimes the politics gets in the way, and they kill the economy on you, and you're stuck with houses that are worth less than what the mortgage is. So but I did like fixing them up. That's for sure.
Yeah, and I would return to WWE. I think I'm still young enough, but. That's up to them. That's up to them. The ball's in their court.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we can get you up here at a Toronto based show. Maybe we'll get you up for the Tiger Fest or maybe one of Santino's Battle Arts shows very soon. But where can people get a hold of you to book you or reach out to you if they want?
My Twitter is at Jinder Mahal. My Instagram is at Jinder Mahal. My email address is bookjmahal@gmail.com. And I have a Facebook too, and that's same Jinder Mahal.
Excellent.
Well, I look forward
Jinder
to seeing you back at maybe for Stampede Week one of these days or something, Jinder. Whenever you come up, maybe look me up or get a hold of your dad. I kind of keep in touch with him while I'm here now. Your uncle.
Okay, perfect. Yeah,
very
good.
I'm going
to be in Calgary during Stampede Week anyway. I usually like to come to Stampede and have a week of partying, but it would be nice to come and wrestle too.
Yeah, well, you have fun in Macau. It's a good place. It's a crotchy vice place. That's, all bets are off there, even though it's gambling.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
Yeah. Okay, God bless you. Have a good trip there, and it's very enjoyable reminiscing with you, Jinder.
Yeah, thank you guys very much for having me on your show.
All right, well, you have a great day, and we'll see you on the indies.
Awesome, thank you guys.
Take care. So, Smith, we just had Jinder Mahal on the show. Great guy. Underused talent in WWE. I personally think he's one of the most underused talents that the company's ever had, especially when you look at the North American market and you look at the Asian markets and you look at all just the global market. There's just such a void of top talents, and he could have really been one of the best.
He single-handedly sponsored more Syrian refugees than all the other independent wrestlers combined. I know they all try to help out, but he's in a position to step right up, and that's I'm proud of him.
Well, Smith, what do you got going on this week? Anything you want to let the fans know?
Well, I did want to let the fans know that I had a great send-off. Some of my best friends arranged for a little kind of half-roast, half-party, and even Ronnie Gap couldn't dampen that, and I loved actually seeing Ronnie and everybody that was there. You understand that there's quite a few that didn't get word, and a lot that were busy on short notice. But there was at least 30 of them out there. Ricky Johnson and his beautiful wife, and little Buck Gunderson. He's a good supporter, and my son Mike was there, and John McLean, wannabe wrestler, bouncer, cop. Lots of great people and friends of mine. And then I'd seen Billy Corgan down there and had some great entertainments with his band. But also I'd been talking to him. He's an old school kind of fan of wrestling, and he's got his position with TNA. And that was great to talk to him on a couple of occasions. And I had a great trip back. It was nice to get back here, this beautiful weather in Calgary. And people ask me about my health. I'm feeling a lot better. I'm not cured of cancer, and apparently you never cure some kinds of cancer. Like what I have, you just control it. You suppress it. You keep it dormant and latent and all that. So I'm actually feeling, alive and not like just as soon being dead like I had for about 5 solid months there. And a lot of that time I wasn't even diagnosed with cancer or cancers, because I got more than one kind. But with the pills, injections, vitamins, turmeric, just being out in the sun a lot, there's a lot of vitamin D in the sun, and eating now, and and sleeping, not being in such pain where I'm so bloated and filled with poisons that I can't sleep or eat. Now that I'm eating and sleeping, and my weight, I'm gaining some of my weight back. I don't need the whole 50 pounds back, but I lost 50 pounds in about 3 sizes in my waist in a 6-month period. So I'd like to reassure any of my fans that were asking that thanks for their concerns and letters and prayers. I'm doing a hell of a lot better. I feel a hell of a lot better. I'm more active now, and trying to maybe make up for lost time as much as anything.
Well, I am glad to hear that you're feeling better. We all, we're praying very hard for your health and your safety, because obviously you've had a big impact on a lot of lives there. So we're glad to hear that you're feeling, starting to feel the effects of being better. Now, before we end the show, I wanted to kind of take a little bit of a detour here and kind of tell an old school rib. And I was wondering if you could give us the story of Sonny Hay.
Sure. Sonny Hay, Cyril Hay, his real name is the younger brother of Dale Roberts, or Dale Hay. My dad liked Dale Hay as a young bodybuilder recruit, kind of a very young kid. I think he was like 17 years old when he first hit Calgary, and fairly good body on him and decent attitude. He actually was with Ivan Koloff's brother Jerry, but Jerry didn't quite get into wrestling. He's big enough, but he was more into hot rodding and stuff, and he was a slight build. He didn't have Dale Hay's body, but anyway, believe it or not, he was quite different from his brother Ivan, or Oral, or whatever you want to call him. He used to be, he was later world champion in New York, WWF, but anyway, Sonny came in a long time later, basically just on the fact that he was Dale's brother. That was good enough for my dad. And he also came in with his partner at the time, Lumberjack Luke. They're both from, outer Vancouver, Surrey, BC. And Sonny, on his first night in Calgary, he was slaughtered by Abdullah the Butcher. So that was good. Nobody knew who he was. And his little white body was covered with blood pretty much from head to toe. And then that's just getting carried out of the ring. He was re-attacked by Abdullah. And this is the first night Abdullah just got this wild, crazy instant heat that was considerably more intense than anything I ever saw the Stomper or Jerry Graham or Killer Kowalski do. Just it was a level, a couple of notches up. It's just deadly. And Abdullah didn't look like much. He looked like a big fat, black guy in karate pants, really. But until he got in the ring and got this instant, got every fan out of his seat, I didn't know much about him, I just saw another big fat, whatever. And he hadn't done anything on TV with Kaniski Gene had a habit of not letting good villains like Walter Von Erich or Abdullah outshine him as the heel, yet he was portraying himself as a baby the whole time, so it was kind of crazy. But anyway, Sonny, the next night in Edmonton, second match, they have a very nasty commission up there, you know, where they not the poor doctor's fault, it's the politics behind it, but they have a very thorough commission where they pay the to him twice in a row. You know, the doctor was pretty much a piss tank, but nice people. But anyway, the old doctor couldn't even drive. He had to, pedal a bike with the two clips on his suit so he didn't catch it in the chain. And he gets in there and has a nip, and then old Tiger Tommaso hits him up with a fresh bottle of brandy, which he takes eagerly. But somewhere along the line, Sonny failed his blood pressure test because he was excited. And, a lot of bodybuilders, for strange reasons, seem to get excited and fail their initial and even many of their blood pressure tests. And I'm against that, mainly, like, you could imagine Ric Flair coming in from Australia to fight the top contender that we've built up for years. And if either one of these guys is too high on the blood pressure, it's not, we recommend you don't wrestle. It's you're not wrestling, you know. Too bad for the fans that paid to see you. Too bad for your airfare that the promoter had to pay and your wage and everything else. You're off the card. You know, that's how bad it was. So anyway, this is a good doctor, a friendly old guy that Tommaso had cultivated over the years because he was living up there in Edmonton as opposed to Calgary in semi-retirement. So anyway, get on with the story. Tommaso took Sonny under his wing and said, listen, kid, just get in the stall there and relieve yourself. And I'm not talking about urinating or defecating. And he said, that'll take the pressure right down. You'll be fine. So he's in there. And, of course, soon where everybody knows that he's in there and what he's trying to do. It's a hot, Klondike Day, Stampede Week Day. And, it's hot as hell in there. And every wrestler all of a sudden has to use a single stall in the dressing room, the same one lousy bathroom seat. And Sonny's getting frustrated. Then they start trying to help him further by passing him. It seems like every wrestler has a copy of Playboy or Penthouse or Hustler or Screw or, Cherry or Velvet or Club International. He's got all these smut magazines all over the floor. And people even have passing him Vaseline and, anal lube and stuff. And so, anyway, Sonny's finally, after Tommaso kind of keeps everybody back, and it's all just a big play. Sonny finally manages and takes the blood pressure test again, and he's all so close, the doctor's a stickler, Sonny's got to go back in and try it again, take a little more pressure off and pass this thing before my dad gets there and the first match is ready to start. And I think, in fact, they had to juggle the order of the card. Tommaso arranged for that and put somebody else on to get Sonny still in there for about 45 minutes, an hour. Sonny's been trying to almost chafing himself, trying to relieve his blood pressure. And finally, the doctor said, you're so close, I'll let you go wrestle or something. But that was a funny thing. It just happened. If Sonny hadn't failed it, it wouldn't have taken place. It was a spontaneous thing. It's not like they did that routinely. That was the only time I ever heard of it in our circuit. And I imagine it's possible to have happened in Montreal, right, Pat? And other places, Anything goes in the big city in New York and, so.
Well, that's a great story, Smith. Lots of fun in the old days of Stampede Wrestling. I think it's about time we wrap this show up here for the day. And what I'd like to
on a clean note.
Yeah, let's wrap it up in noting that next week that we will have former WWE writer Kevin Eck, who is also the editor of the Baltimore Sun, on the show with us, and we're going
to
talk all the creative.
That's be a great interview.
Smith has had constant words with the creative team, the creative members of the current WWE system on his Twitter account
mostly
for the better part of last. Well, Smith can be found on Twitter at SmithArt1. You can find him on Facebook, and you can find me, Matt Jocelyn, on Facebook as well. And we'd like to thank you once again for coming back to Heart Grapevine Wrestling. We'll see you next week.
Adios, everybody. Adios, amigos.
Attention sports fans, collectors, hobbyists, and autograph seekers. Are you looking for the best in sports cards and collectibles? The only name you need to know is Carl's. That's right, Carl's Cards and Collectibles in Havertown, PA not only has the best collection of sports memorabilia, cards, game, used merchandise, and autograph signings of top professional athletes, he also does custom framing too. Go to carlscards.com or like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at Carl's Cards. That's Carl's Cards and Collectibles, 22 West Eagle Road in Havertown, PA. Remember, Carl's, the only and best name in sports cards and collectibles. For $5 today, you can buy a wealth of things. Gas for your car, rent a movie for the family, a few slices of pizza. $5 still takes you a long ways. But did you know that $5 can buy your child a bag of heroin on the streets? That's right. For only $5, your son or daughter can buy some of the cheapest and purest dope in the country. Be aware of the lies. Be aware of the stealing. Be aware that's all it takes to kill your child. $5. This message was brought to you by Casey's Cause, a group of parents located in southern Chester County out to save your child's life. Come join us today at www.caseyscause.com. And remember, $5 is all it takes. Casey's Cause, www.caseyscause.com.
Looking for that perfect gift for your girlfriend? Then look no further than Teddy Scares. Teddy Scares are available in a variety of styles, sizes, and prices for all your shopping needs. Teddy Scares are a mix of cute and creepy to make a great gift for almost any age. Board up your windows, lock your doors, and log on to TeddyScares.com. And be sure to become our friends at Facebook.com/TeddyScares.
Attention business owners, website owners, event promoters, or anyone looking to promote your product. The Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network is the perfect way to spread the word of your business around the world. That's right, you can advertise at our network and be played on all of our shows at rates that are so cheap, it's a no-brainer. For more information, contact Bay Ragney at bayragney@gmail.com. To keep your business driven, stay driven with Totally Driven Entertainment.
Calling all comic book fans. Do you collect comics? Did you ever collect comics? Do you think your children might like reading comic books? Do you even know they still print real, paper, non-digital comic books? Well, then visit the Pirates of Ontario Street Comics in Philadelphia. We have a massive collection of comic books, action figures, trading cards, and much more. We have one of the largest stocks of back-issue comics in the area. We bag and board every new comic book at no extra charge. Our store is voted the best comic book shop in the 2013 PHL 17 Hot List Contest. Part of the movie Unbreakable is filmed in our store. We are open 7 days a week. Ontario Street Comics is located at 2235 East Ontario Street in the Port Richmond section of Philly. Our phone number is 215-288-7338. Type in the words Ontario Comics Philadelphia to check out our wacky stores page on Facebook.
Trash City Beads, the great bead store with the weird name, selling beads and findings for over 25 years. Visit us online at trashcity.com. Like us on Facebook at Trash City Beads. Unique beads, charms, crystals, and findings from all over the world at wholesale prices. No store, no showroom, we are online only. Visit us at trashcity.com. Trash City Beads is your online source for the best beads on the planet. Remember the name, Trash City Beads.
Hey everybody, this is Nick Wilkinson from TV Nation and Totally Driven Radio and Entertainment. Sadly, each year, approximately 3.6 million children become victims of child abuse. My latest ebook, Child Abuse, The Ripple Effect, explores the long-lasting effects abuse can have on victims. Explore life after the abuse ends and how we cope with the tragedies of the past. Child Abuse, The Ripple Effect is available on Kindle for only 99 cents. And don't forget to check out my website, actingnotreacting.com, a common sense approach to teens in crisis. Let's work together and make this world a better place. And remember, stay driven.
Are you a fan of Sherlock Holmes? Letters from Holmes offers unique, one-of-a-kind letters from the world-famous detective himself. Handwritten on 8.5-inch by 11-inch aged parchment paper and using smudge-free ink to produce original, high-quality letters that fans will treasure for years to come. Each letter is handcrafted and written from the perspective of Sherlock Holmes, mimicking Holmes's native tongue and embracing many of the famous detective's quirks, quips, insults, and peculiarities. Order a love letter, birthday greeting, personal correspondence, or more only at www.etsy.com/shop/lettersfromhomes.
Did you know that Totally Driven Entertainment has tons of different podcasts? As a matter of fact, we have podcasts on every day of the week with topics ranging from politics all the way to pro wrestling and total entertainment. On Monday nights, you have two amazing shows. At 6 p.m., you have Hard Talk with Big Daddy and Big Booty Trudy. And at 11 p.m., we have the new show,
8 Flights Up.
So you guys definitely going to want to check out those two. On Tuesday at noon, we have Pro Wrestling Now with Mike Ferreira, where Mike gives us a rundown of everything in the world of professional wrestling this week. Moving into midweek, we have three shows that are totally different and totally driven. At 9:30 a.m. on Wednesday, Hump Day, we have the Coco and Wee Wee Show. On Wednesday at 8 p.m., journey into the world of comics, cosplay, and more with Give No F's Cosplay, one of our newest shows. That brings us to Thursday. Thank God it's Thursday, because at 5 p.m., we have Pro Wrestling Now with Mike Ferrer, where he wraps up the end of the week and talks a little bit about SmackDown, NXT, and some Japanese wrestling. Thursday night at 8 p.m., the show that started it all, Totally Driven Radio, with your hosts, Bay Ragney and Nick Wilkinson. This show has a little bit for everyone. There's celebrity gossip, interviews, Hollywood reporters, Dancing with the Stars moments, Metal, Mayhem, and Moondog. Friday nights at 8 p.m., Uncle Shawnee's Playground is guaranteed to make somebody mad and somebody cry. At 10 p.m. on Friday night, we have the LAW Retro Wrestling Hour, where we talk all about the golden age of wrestling and what it was like back then to see amazing men do amazing things. Hey, and some of our best programming is on the weekends. On Saturdays at 10 a.m., you can listen to the Mojo Sports Show and talk all kinds of sports with Mr. Mojo. At 9 p.m. that night, Bay Ragney does Totally Driven Radio Rocks, where he features different kind of music, different songs, different eras, just whatever's on his mind that week when it comes to music. Sunday's Funday at 10 a.m., start your weekend off with a big weenie. The Big Weenie Castanini Show is on every week, and it's sure to please. And ends the week with the Nerd Herd at 9 p.m. on Sunday nights. You can join the TV Nation and you can talk all about the latest in TV, comics, and comic book movies. Bay's going to tell you what he's been watching. We're going to talk about our Men in Tights. And finally, we're going to do our top five list each and every week. It's a different list. Hey, and if you're not busy listening to your new favorite podcast, check out some of our social media pages. You can find us on YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Periscope, and more. Totally Driven Radio. Get driven. Stay driven.